It was 5 o'clock on a July afternoon, and the heat was terrible. The huge stone-built town breathed out heat like a glowing furnace. The glare of the white-walled house was insufferable. The asphalt pavement grew soft and burned the feet. The shadows of the acacia spread over the cobbled road, pitiful and weary. They, too, seemed hot. The sea, pale in sunlight, lay heavy and immobile as one dead. Over the streets hung a white dust. In the foyer of one of the private theaters, a small committee of local barristers who had undertaken to conduct the case of those who had suffered in the last pogrom against the Jews was reaching the end of its daily task. There were 19 of them, all juniors, young, progressive, and conscientious men. The sitting was without formality, and white suits of duck, flannel, and alpaca were in the majority. They sat anywhere at little marble tables, and a chairman stood in front of an empty counter where chocolates were sold in the winter. The barristers were quite exhausted by the heat which poured in through the windows. With the dazzling sunlight and the noise of the streets, the proceedings went lazily and with certain irritation. A tall young man with a fair mustache and thin hair was in the chair. He was dreaming voluptuously how he would be off in an instant on his new-bought bicycle to the bungalow. He would undress quickly and, without waiting to cool, still bathed in sweat, would fling himself in the clear, cold, sweet-smelling sea. His whole body was enervated and tense, thrilled by the thought. Impatiently moving the papers before him, he spoke in a drowsy voice. So Joseph Mordovinci will conduct the case of Rubinich. Perhaps there is still a statement to be made on the order of the day. His youngest colleague, a short, stout curate, very black and lively, said in a whisper so everyone could hear, on the order of the day, the best thing would be a ice kvass. The chairman gave him a stern side glance, but could not restrain a smile. He sighed and put both hands on the table to raise himself and declare the meeting closed. When the doorkeeper, who stood at the entrance of the theater, suddenly moved forward and said, "There are 7 people outside, sir. They want to come in." The chairman looked impatiently round the company. "What is to be done, gentlemen?" Voices were heard. "Next time, basta. Let them put it in writing. If they'll get it over quickly, decide it at once. Let them go to the devil. It's like bowling pitch." "Let them in." The chairman gave a sign with his head, annoyed. "Then bring me a vichy, please. But it must be cold." The porter opened the door and called down the quarter. "Come in. They say you may." Then 7 of the most surprising and unexpected individuals filed into the foyer. First appeared a full-grown, confident man in a smart suit of the color of the dry sea sand, in a magnificent pink shirt with white stripes and a crimson rose in his buttonhole. From the front of his head, looked like an upright bean, from the side, like a horizontal bean. His face was adorned with a strong, bushy, martial mustache. He wore dark blue pince-nez on his nose, on his hands straw-colored gloves. In his left hand, he held a black walking stick with a silver mount, in his right hand, a light blue handkerchief. The other 6 produced a strange, chaotic, incongruous impression, exactly as though they had all hastily pooled not merely their clothes, but their hands, feet, and heads as well. There was a man with a splendid profile of a Roman senator, dressed in rags and tatters. Another wore an elegant dress waistcoat, from the deep opening of which a dirty little Russian shirt leapt to the eye. Here were the unbalanced faces of the criminal type, but looking with confidence that nothing could shake. All of these men, in spite of their apparent youth, evidently possessed a large experience of life, an easy manner and bold approach, and some hidden suspicious cunning. The gentleman in the sandy suit bowed his head neatly and easily and said with a half question in his voice, "Mr. Chairman?" "Yes, I am the chairman. What is your business?" "We, all whom you see before you," the gentleman began in a quiet voice and turned round to indicate his companions, "we come as delegates from the United Rostov, Kharkov, and Odessa Nikolaev Association of Thieves." The barristers began to shift in their seats. The chairman flung himself back and opened his eyes wide. "Association of what?" he said, perplexed. "The Association of Thieves," the gentleman in the sandy suit coolly replied. "As for myself, my comrades did me the single honor of electing me as a spokesman of the deputation." "Very pleased," the chairman said uncertainly. "Thank you. All 7 of us are ordinary thieves. naturally of different departments. The association has authorized us to put before your esteemed committee, the gentleman again made an elegant bow, our respectful demand for assistance. I don't quite understand, quite frankly, what is the connection? The chairman waved his hands helplessly. However, please go on. The matter about which we have the courage and honor to apply to you, gentlemen, is very clear, very simple, and very brief. It will take about 6 or 7 minutes. I consider it my duty to warn you of this beforehand, in view of the late hour and the 115 degrees that Fahrenheit marks on the shade. The orator expectorated slightly and glanced at his superb gold watch. You see, in the reports that have lately appeared in the local papers of the melancholy and terrible days of the last pogrom, there have very often been indications that among the instigators of the pogrom, who were paid and organized by the police, the dregs of society, consisting of drunkards, tramps, sojourners, and hooligans from the slums, these were also to be found. At first we were silent, but finally we considered ourselves under the necessity of protesting against such an unjust and serious accusation, before the face of the whole of intellectual society. I know well that in the eye of the law, we are offenders and enemies of society. But imagine only for a moment, gentlemen, the situation of this enemy of society when he is accused wholesale of an offense which he not only never committed, but which he is ready to resist with the whole strength of his soul. It goes without saying that he will feel the outrage of such an injustice more keenly than a normal, average, fortunate citizen. Now, we declare that the accusation brought against us is utterly devoid of all basis, not merely of fact, but even logic. I intend to prove in a few words if the Honorable Committee will kindly listen. Proceed, said the chairman. Please do, please, was heard from the barristers, now animated. I offer you my sincere thanks in the name of all my comrades. Believe me, you will never repent your attention to the representatives of our, well, let us say slippery, but nevertheless difficult professions. So we begin, as Giordani sings in the prologue to Paglesi. But first I would ask your permission, Mr. Chairman, to quench my thirst a little. Porter, bring me a lemonade and a glass of English bitter. There's a good fellow. Gentlemen, I will not speak of the moral aspect of our profession, nor of its social importance. Doubtless you know better than I the striking and brilliant paradox of Proudhon, Le Portier C.S. Laveau. A paradox, if you like, but one that has never yet been refuted by the sermons of cowardly bourgeois or fat priests. For instance, a father accumulates a million by energetic and clever exploitations and leaves it to his son. A rickety, lazy, ignorant, degenerate idiot, a brainless magnet, a true parasite. Potentially, a million rubles is a million working days. The absolutely irrational right to labor, sweat, life, and blood of a terrible number of men. Why? What is the ground of reason? Utterly unknown. Then why not agree with the proposition, gentlemen, that our profession is to some extent, as it were, a correction of the excessive accumulation of values in the hands of individuals and serves as a protest against all the hardships, abominations, arbitrariness, violence, and negligence of the human personality, against all the monstrosities created by the bourgeois capitalist organizations of modern society. Sooner or later, this order of things will assuredly be overturned by the social revolution. Property will pass away into the limbo of melancholy memories, and with it, alas, we will disappear from the face of the earth. We, less brave chevaliers d'industrie, the orator paused to take the tray from the hands of the porter and placed it near to his hand on the table. Excuse me, gentlemen. And by the way, when you go out, shut the door close behind you. Very good, Your Excellency, the porter bawled in jest. The orator drank half of a glass and continued. However, let us leave aside the philosophical, social, and economic aspects of the question. I do not wish to fatigue your attention. I must nevertheless point out that our profession very closely approaches the idea of what is called art. Into it enter all the elements which go to form art: vocation, inspiration, fantasy, inventiveness, ambition, and a long and arduous apprenticeship to the science. From it is absent virtue alone.